You are listening to the Cycling Podcast in association with Rafa, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004.
Hello, my name's Richard Moore. I'm with Lionel Burney.
Hello, Richard.
And joining us tonight, Seb Piquet.
Bonjour à tous.
Thank you, Seb. Well, Seb is, of course, the voice of Radio Tour. And we're going to have a rotating cast of guests on the tour, as well as Daniel Freeb, who's disappeared today off to some cycling museum, but he will be joining us for the rest of the tour. But Seb, you're the voice of Race Radio. We did a Kilometre Zero with you last year. Normally I say, where are we, Lionel? But I thought it'd be more appropriate today to say, where are we, Seb?
We are in Normandy. Bienvenue sur le Tour de France. Welcome to the area of La Manche.
Nice, nice. We're just practicing there, aren't you?
Yeah. Getting ready for Saturday's first stage of Le Tour de France.
Well, how is the voice? Is it in fine fettle? Because you've got a lot of speaking ahead of you the next 3 weeks. You're the guy that sits in the car and basically calls the race to everybody in the race.
Yeah, a bit of a cold, but it should be okay for tomorrow. All set for the 3 weeks and the 21 stages of the event. I've been working on my list of riders, on the places we'll be going through, the touristic news that I might be able to give on Radio Tour. So all set. Je suis prêt.
Excellent. You know, it's best to come into the tour a little bit undercooked, isn't it? Always. They always say that. Chris Froome certainly tried to come here a bit undercooked, ready for the third week. And Lionel, are we undercooked? Are we overcooked? Are we just about right?
Well, we've both done a couple of weeks of the Giro, haven't we? So we should be in fairly good form. We've had a few weeks of easy recovery time.
It's a Mikel Landa approach, isn't it?
And now we're all set. We're all set for the big one. And it really is the big one, isn't it? Shall I run
Well,
through?
Before you do that, Lionel, we should just say initially, at the outset, thank you very much indeed to our new sponsor, Rafa, who have come on board for the Tour de France and beyond. We've agreed a partnership with Rafa for the rest of this year, which we're extremely pleased about, very excited about, and it all came about after the Giro. And thank you very much to them. We'll be doing a lot of exciting things, I think, with Rafa at this tour and beyond. And we're also still sponsored by Eurosport, who once again are sponsoring our Daily Pedler de Charme Award, which we will kick off on Saturday with Stage 1. But you're going to run through a few facts and figures and numbers.
Well, we're just getting into the swing of it here in Normandy, aren't we? The Tour de France in numbers, it's the biggest annual sporting event in the world. I think it still qualifies as that. Nothing else quite to match it or touch it. There's 198 riders in 22 teams of nine. They'll be riding 3,535 kilometres in 21 stages. Nine of those stages are flat, nine are mountain stages. Four of those nine have summit finishes. There's two individual time trials. There's 28 second, first or category mountains. In the 3 weeks, we'll be visiting four countries, France, of course, Spain, Andorra and Switzerland. There's 38 start or finish towns, including 16 new ones. Only 42 people live on Mont Saint-Michel. Interesting. The longest stage is 237.5 kilometres. That's stage four from Saumur to Limoges. The shortest is the final one from Chantilly to the Champs-Élysées. That's 113 kilometres. The highest point of the race, 2,408 metres. The Port d'Envillara, where the souvenir Henri de Grange will be awarded to the first rider over the top. The tour will use more than 200 hotels. There are 23,000 police officers securing the route. 10 to 12 million spectators will be watching from the roadside. They'll see 170 vehicles in the publicity caravan. The race is broadcast in 190 countries. Six of the stages will be broadcast in full. There's 2,000 journalists from 600 different media outlets, three podcasters and a host of guests along the way.
In Mont Saint-Michel, where the race will start, we're very sort of picturesque backdrop, but not a very practical place to say. Colleagues of ours booked an hotel on Mont Saint-Michel and then found themselves stranded there and couldn't get to the Team Sky press conference the other day. Orla Chenoui, I think I can say, was one of those people. So that was a bit of a...
That was because the tide was in, wasn't it?
Something, just, yeah.
So the causeway was covered.
As you were speaking there, Lionel, I suddenly remembered, it's your birthday. Oh, happy birthday.
Thank you.
A very happy birthday, Monsieur Burney.
Thank you, Seb. Thank you, Richard.
He's tried to keep that very low key.
Yeah, I won't ask you to sing happy birthday
reasons. Yeah, you wouldn't sing happy birthday to me at the Giro for rights reasons, apparently. Do you on the race, Seb, when you're in the car, how do you acknowledge birthdays?
In the morning, I check out the riders or members of the staff who are celebrating their birthdays. And if I have time, if there's not too much action, I will invite everyone to the birthday party of the person at the person's hotel.
You don't sing a little bon anniversaire over radio tour?
No, I'm not really the singer type, but happy birthday, bon anniversaire à toi, dear whoever. We'll be fine.
Excellent. Listen, it's funny these 2 days before the tour, because there seems to be a lot going on. In reality, there's not a lot going on. There's press conferences. Nobody really says much. They seem to be getting less and less important, the press conferences, I think, as riders and teams have other channels, their own channels to communicate. It seems to be less important than actually going to the press conferences, which is one reason why we haven't been to any, Lionel. It's pointless, really. But there's a sort of there are a lot of things going on. There have been bits of news, haven't there? This is traditionally, or has been since 2008. I think it was the first time where teams High Road Columbia and Garmin Slipstream back then announced new sponsors and effectively new names on the eve of the tour, and that's happened again this year.
It has for a couple of teams. Orica Green Edge are now Orica Bike Exchange. They've got a new co-sponsor and a new jersey. It's going to be very difficult to tell them apart from Movistar, because they've gone dark blue with green and a little flash of white. And Cannondale are now Cannondale Drapac. They've added the Drapac logo to their green.
And that's a five-year agreement.
Yeah, a 5-year agreement. We'll talk to Jonathan Vorters perhaps in the next few days about the significance of that move, because it is quite a significant development for the Cannondale team. And as people have been pointing out, Cannondale or the Slipstream organisation have kind of cannibalised quite a few teams over the course of their life. They absorbed Cervelo, didn't they? They absorbed Cannondale, and now Drapac, who have got a domestic team in Australia, has become part of that organisation as well.
Just a quick word on what you just said about Orica and the new jersey. It looks a lot like Movistar. It's going to be a nightmare to recognise the riders from Orica or from Movistar, from the red car of Radio Tour, but also for the journalists on TV.
Especially when, you know, it changes on the eve of the tour like this. You've not had the season to become, because you cover a lot of other races as well, Seb, don't you? And all the ASO races. So you usually have a run into the tour where you can identify teams and riders, and then when it gets to this big stage, you pretty much know what you're doing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I know that it won't be too much of a problem, because it only concerns one team, I mean, in terms of jerseys. But I don't understand how that team could choose those colours that look so much like another.
It's a pickle, isn't it? And, you know, we watch the Tour de France with a fantastic kind of kaleidoscope of colours that it is. It's so important for TV audience who perhaps are coming to the Tour de France as their only real cycling viewing of the year. The audience for the Tour dwarfs that of all the other races. There's a lot of people who will only watch the Tour. Pretty critical that they can tell the main teams apart. I mean, that's sort of page one of the manual, really. I mean, if you had a football match where two teams are wearing virtually the same colours, it wouldn't be tolerated. But there we are, the changes have happened. A little bit of sponsorship news though, Rich. We're hearing that Bora are going to become Bora Hansgrohe when they sign up with another German co-sponsor next year, and the big rumour is that the world champion Peter Sagan may be heading there.
So the rumour is they're stepping up to World Tour, and you know, it's great news for German cycling, I suppose. The Tour de France starts in Germany next year, of course. And yeah, rumoured that Peter Sagan is joining that team, which came out of the blue a little bit.
Yeah, indeed. I was actually having a word with Eric Zabel this morning at breakfast, and we were talking about the Bora issue. Bora are, of course, sponsored by Bora and Argon 18, because they're a continental team. But the deal is that if they go to World Tour, Argon 18 would leave, Specialized would come in, and with Specialized, Monsieur Peter Sagan.
Very, very interesting, because we heard that Specialized were looking to downscale a little bit, but then, you know, that wouldn't make much sense if it meant losing their prize asset, who is Sagan and maybe Contador as well.
Second rumour concerning Contador, I was told a few minutes ago that he could actually be going to Trek.
Well, he's ridden on Trek before, hasn't he? He was on a Trek at Astana back in the day, but he's been on a Specialized the last few years. And the bike companies are increasingly influential, aren't they, in determining who rides where?
Yeah, exactly. It was the case with Cavendish, if I'm correct, a few years ago. It'll probably be the case with Sagan. But on the other hand, if he goes to Bora, he has to go with some riders around him, because they don't really have the team for the moment to support him.
But great to see a team like that stepping up, because they've been around for several years. I think it's a team that a lot of people sort of admire from a distance. Ralph Denk has done a great job of building that team up. I did an interview with him back in January in Mallorca, and he just spoke about the challenges he faced in making the team sustainable. And at that time, he was talking to a few sponsors, and it's great that one of them has come off. In fact, we'll be hearing a little bit from him in a German cycling edition of Kilometre Zero next week, with an interview with Marcel Kittel in that one as well. A few other little bits and pieces before we go into looking at the race, and we'll look at the overall. You don't like speculation, Lionel, but I'm afraid that's inevitable in what is the eve of the tour. But one or two little bits. Nasser Buhani is not here, Seb, your countryman. Very embarrassing. I mean, sorely missed by Cofidis.
Well, it's embarrassing for him, but it's really embarrassing for Cofidis, who'd placed so much hopes in one rider. What happened was that on the Saturday evening, Saturday night actually, before the French Championships, he was caught in a fight against someone from a room that was next to his, who was making a lot of noise, who had a few drinks, and it ended up in a punch-up. He injured his hands, ended in hospital, but this is my opinion. Things like that can happen. If you're really annoyed, you're focusing on a race, you can't sleep, that can happen. What cannot happen, and I find it shocking, is that he was on the start list of the French Championships the next day, injured, and that he was treated so badly. For 4 stitches, he was treated extremely badly, and the result of that is that he will not be starting the Tour de France. So, honestly, I'm pretty surprised by the management of Cofidis.
When you say he's treated badly, you mean he didn't get the proper medical attention?
Exactly. He was he went to the hospital on that morning to have 4 stitches placed on his hand. Apparently, there was a bit of the tooth of the guy he punched still in the wound, but wow. He was badly treated. Again, he was lined up on the French Championships. What an idea to line him up on French Championships, where he had absolutely no hope. And then it ended up that he had to go to hospital again on the Tuesday night to have major surgery, because the wound hadn't been healed well the first time, and he's not on the Tour de France, and it's a major blow for Cofidis, who had placed all their hopes in this one guy to maybe win a few stages, a few sprint stages.
Well, he is a big boxing fan, of course, isn't he? And he paid a tribute to Muhammad Ali when he won a stage of the Critérium du Dauphiné. But I mean, has he taken this tribute to Ali a little bit too far?
Yeah, well, I think he's pretty annoyed with that issue, because a lot of people say he's a fighter. He says that he loves boxing as a sport, not as a fight. He says he's not a fighter. He just uses boxing during the winter break. He trains a lot on his punching bag during the winter break to work on certain parts of his body, because he finds it important to have muscles developed on certain parts of his body for the sprints. But he doesn't want to be considered as a fighter.
Well, he's going the wrong way about that, isn't he? I mean, punching somebody because they've made a bit too much noise. Although, having said that, you know, it can be very annoying if you miss a night's sleep, can't it?
It can, Lionel, and you're sleeping in adjacent rooms tonight and last night, so I better watch my step.
Indeed.
You are listening to the Cycling Podcast in association with Rafa. Whoever you are, wherever you ride, whatever the reason, Rafa exists to improve your ride. With the finest kit, inspiring stories, and vibrant clubhouses and communities all over the world. See rafa.cc for more information.
So no Nasser Buhani, which will make the sprints a little bit less interesting, maybe a little safer, given the way his sprint train, and Daniel Freeb did put out quite an amusing tweet the other day, sprint train for hire, if any of us up for it, a pretty good sprint train. Sam Bennett, the Bora rider, said earlier this year that he thought Cofidis were one of the best sprint trains. They're certainly very physical.
Yeah, indeed. And so Cofidis will be counting on one of the members of that sprint train to actually do the sprints, and that should normally be Christophe Laporte, who hasn't a lot of experience in these sprints against the top riders in the world. So that would be interesting to see how he can cope with the pressure of being the leader in sprints and having to fight out with guys like Kittel, Greipel and others.
It'd be difficult because they've been those guys in the lead out train for Buhani have been more concerned a lot of time with headbutting people. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. But no, it is a shame that Buhani is not there. But it is a good good old field, obviously, of sprinters. Greipel upset Kittel at the German Championships. He won the German Championships. Quite a surprise, I think. Mark Cavendish, in his press conference, which we didn't obviously attend, but we heard about, didn't play down his chances, but played down this idea that the yellow jersey is the thing that he most wants, the sort of the box that he wants to tick most in his career. He's never had a yellow jersey, and it's another chance for him tomorrow from Mont-Saint-Michel on a pretty flat, could be quite a windy stage. There's a bit of wind forecast, so it could be, there could be splits. If there are, you would expect Cavendish to be up there anyway. And I had one of our friends, Paul Shafto, who helps the Cycling Podcast, texted me earlier to say that he was near the finish at Utah Beach and saw the Dimension Data guys riding the last 3 or 4 kilometres flat out in a sort of lead-out train, obviously having a look at the finish. It's pretty safe. It's not too technical, I don't think, but they were obviously practicing that. So it's a big one again for Cavendish. Tomorrow, Marcel Kittel's the big favourite, isn't he? But can Cavendish do it?
Well, he can, but it's a while since we've seen him really pull off a win of this kind of calibre. I mean, he won a stage of the Tour last year. It's been a season this year where he's done an awful lot of track work, so his leg speed should be good. He's obviously looking ahead at the Rio Olympics, where he is riding the Omnium and part of the Team Pursuit group. Whether or not he'll get a ride in the Team Pursuit, I would imagine they try to get through without him riding.
I'd imagine they'll be hoping not.
Yeah, so it's not like he's been, you know, drilled and focused entirely on the Tour de France. And as we know, sometimes he can be a little bit of a cold starter, doesn't necessarily get his Grand Tours off to, you know, that a flying start. Usually takes him 2-3 sprints to get into the swing of things. And of course, if you were Christian Prudhomme and Thierry Gouvenou have designed this opening weekend here in Normandy, the course hugs the coastline, the little jigsaw puzzly bit that sticks out goes up towards Cherbourg, and it really does hug the coast. And the wind, the weather here is not great. The forecast is for a bit of rain, wind. If that is what we see tomorrow, then it becomes less about the purity of the sprinters, more about luck, more about team organisation, more about who gets into position in the going into the last 10 kilometres, and then, you know, who can execute the best. And at the moment, I would say Etix Quickstep and Marcel Kittel versus André Greipel and Lotto Soudal is what it looks like to me at the moment. But you know me, speculation, not my strong suit.
Seb, you will know the course, the terrain, countryside very well.
Yeah, I've studied, of course, the maps, and indeed the wind will have an effect if it is windy on stage one as well as on stage two. It will certainly have an effect, and that's maybe why Cavendish might have a slight advantage there, because he has the experience. He loves the echelons, he loves when the wind blows, and he always has the energy and the team around him. He has a pretty strong team around him with Bernie Eisel, with Cummings, and with Mark Renshaw, so that could be an advantage for Cavendish.
It'll be interesting with Etix, because they've come here not with all their eggs in the Kittel basket. They've also got Julian Alaphilippe and Dan Martin, of course, who won't be much use in a lead-out train. And, you know, with Cavendish as well, there's, you know, do we imagine that Steve Cummings is... I was speaking to someone last week who is a good friend of Cummings, said absolutely couldn't see him forming part of the lead-out train at all. But, you know, with his speed, he could do maybe 10 to 5 kilometres or something. He'll have some role.
Well, yeah, but then again, and when we look back at the Dauphiné, Cummings had pointed out one stage, and he was focused on one stage. And that's really what he might be doing on this Tour de France again, because it pays off. And when he wants to win, he actually wins. So I think he won't be too concerned by the Cavendish or the train. I think he'll be really, really focused on one stage, maybe the one going to Le Luron, maybe a bit later or during the third week. And often when he really focuses on that stage and rests before that, because he's absolutely not focused on the GC, it could well pay off, and he could. I wouldn't be surprised if he won yet again a stage on the Tour de France.
Well, one of the reasons he loves that team, and one of the reasons he's thrived on that team, is that he's given a completely free hand. And, you know, it would be difficult for him to be then given very clear instructions about the last 10, 20 kilometres. If you watch a peloton and Steve Cummings is riding a race, invariably he is the last man in the bunch, which gives him a very valuable bottom. And that gives me an excuse to mention our other sponsor, Niederberg Wines, who sponsored Dimension Data. Niederberg are sponsoring our Kilometer Zero series. We'll be producing 5 kilometer zeros a week, Monday to Friday. It's 15 throughout the tour, so that begins on Monday, and we've got lots of really good stuff lined up for that as well.
We have. They go out in the mornings, and of course there'll be a regular wrap-up show every evening of the race. We'll be taking a little bit of a day off on the rest days, won't we?
We will, yes. So anything else, Seb? We were chatting before, you were talking about some of the local riders here, the Normandy riders, who there, I think there are three in the field.
Yeah, indeed. I don't think we'll see Normandy winners, but we'll certainly see maybe three of those guys who are from Normandy in breakaways. One of them is called De La Place. He rides for Fortuneo Vital Concept. The second guy is Amael Moinard, rides for BMC, actually just extended his contract with BMC for 2 years. He should be really focused on Sunday's stage that finishes in Cherbourg, where he is from. And the third guy is a young, promising rider who's riding his first tour, Alexis Goujard from AG2R La Mondiale, a winner of a stage on the Vuelta last year. He's a very, very strong rider indeed, and I wouldn't be surprised if he gives it a go, and he'll certainly be in a breakaway.
Seb, before we go on to talk about the race overall, just, you know, you're somebody whose role is very specific. You're in the car, you're supposed to be objective and impartial, but do you have your favourites? You know, is it hard for you not to get caught up emotionally in the race?
I have absolutely no favourites. All the riders, all the 198 riders are my favourites.
They're just numbers.
Exactly, they're just numbers. I don't even recognise them. I just look at the numbers.
Eurosport, the home of cycling.
Not sure about Seb's last answer there, Lionel. I think he comes across as a very passionate man. I mean, have you ever met a Frenchman who isn't passionate? And we must say a big thank you to the welcome that we've got here in France after recent events in Great Britain.
Yeah. Apparently that wasn't too much of an issue for you. I hope you enjoyed the cheese of Normandy and the cider. Did you have a taste of those?
We did. We enjoyed it very much. We always enjoy the food and pretty much everything about France. So we'll be trying to repair a bit of the damage over the next few weeks. We're on a charm offensive, aren't we, Lionel?
We are. Again, not something that comes naturally to me.
It's going to be very difficult. Very difficult indeed. But no, let's have a look just briefly at the overall. Again, it's going to be difficult to get to draw Lionel on this, but there is a yellow jersey to be won. There's Chris Froome going for his third tour victory, which should put him in a very select club indeed.
Yeah, I mean, I've got four things that I'm looking forward to. I don't like speculation, but there's a lot to really, I think, get excited about. It looks like Chris Froome versus Nairo Quintana for the overall. If you were looking at the odds on the bookmakers' website, that's how it's shaping up. Everybody expects Nairo Quintana to step up another half a level, really give Chris Froome a very close run for his money. The other three things that I'm looking forward to are the internal politics at Astana between Vincenzo Nibali, who of course won the Giro, and Fabio Aru, who was supposed to be the leader of the team coming here, but we will now have to see how both those riders go and how they work together. Then there's BMC Racing. I think it's fascinating that Richie Porte has been so good in his most recent race, as has TJ Van Garderen. They were split up at the Dauphiné and the Tour de Suisse, and they both look good. Can they both finish high up? Will one of them have a chance to actually win or get onto the podium? How will they play that out amongst themselves? And then the final thing I'm looking forward to is the challenge of the French, because Romain Bardet, Thibaut Pinot and Warren Barguil continue to improve, continue to get better. And we say it every year, but the Tour de France really does need the nation to kind of get behind it and have at least a strand of the race that is truly red, white and blue.
Absolutely. You mentioned Bardet, Barguil and Pinot. I think you could maybe add another one who could come in as a surprise. It's Julien Alaphilippe, who was impressive on the Dauphiné. He won the Tour of California. It's his first Tour de France. He's only 24 years of age. Now, does he have the legs, the energy for 3 weeks? That's the big question mark. But I think he could surprise quite a few. He's not going to win the Tour de France the first year. And if he does, I go back to Paris walking naked. I never should have said that.
I hope there's a stage where there's a massive split and Alaphilippe's in it.
We're rooting for Alaphilippe here. Not that we want to see you walking to Paris naked or anything.
No. I wouldn't be surprised to see Alaphilippe actually on day two. He could actually be in yellow on day two, but he's certainly a guy. He's a fresh, young French guy with great legs, a great attitude. He's a really fun guy, fun in interviews. I had the opportunity to speak to him during the Dauphiné for a long interview, and he's happy to be there. He's smiling all the time. He's messing around with the others. He's so enthusiastic, and he has the legs.
It's interesting, isn't it? We have Pino's just extended with Francis Dujeux. Oh, we've got Nairo Quintana walking past us here. There he is. Well, there he is with his director sportif.
Where are we, Nairo?
There he is, looking, very untroubled. Nobody's really bothering him at all.
Training shoes fresh out of the box.
Yeah, I was going to say about the French riders, we've got sort of two on French teams. Pino's just extended with Francis Dujeux. Barguil and Alaphilippe are both on foreign teams, and those are teams who are not focused entirely on them. They have, Barguil has obviously got Degenkolb, and it's a team with multiple aims, as is Etix Quickstep. Does that help those guys in not putting too much pressure on them too early?
I think so. I think so for Alaphilippe, because Etix will be counting on Dan Martin and, of course, Marcel Kittel for the sprint. So they've given him a role of free agent. I don't know he'll be their wild card for some stages, and he doesn't have to focus on GC at all. For Barguil, let's not forget that it's only his second Tour de France, so he's still a young rider, and he won't have too much pressure, maybe a bit more than last year, especially after his good performance last year. But yeah, certainly that puts them in a better situation, not having too much pressure.
Well, I'm quite interested in looking at the overall battle, and we do anticipate that as being, you know, Quintana and Froome. You know, this first week is critical for Quintana, and if there are these crosswinds, it's going to be, you know, he lost the Tour effectively last year on day two in crosswinds. The two Tours that Froome has won, 2013, 2015, Quintana has clawed back around about a minute and a half over the last few days. So with the passing of time, with Froome perhaps not quite at the level he was at last year, with Quintana improving all the time, he's much younger and definitely getting stronger each year. I think that Froome needs 2 minutes on Quintana going into that final week with those four really tough stages at the end. I think, and that makes those 2 weeks very interesting, you know, in terms of Froome trying to build the sort of advantages that he'll need.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other question is, like last year, like in 2013, Froome chooses a stage to hit really, really hard. It was the case last year going up to La Pierre Saint-Martin, if I'm correct, and he hit hard, and that's probably where he won the Tour de France. So the question is, where will Froome decide to give it all? And is that, will he have the same tactic as last year or in 2013? But talking about Quintana, it's going to be really interesting. You never really know what to expect from Quintana. Of course, he's doing really well on the Route du Sud that he won, and he spent, I don't know, 3 months back home in Tunja, in Colombia, preparing, focused, in altitude. And for me, he's the favourite.
I think that is... it's funny, isn't it? People are very divided on who's the favourite, Froome or Quintana. There's a very good argument for both, and Froome certainly has the stronger and more, perhaps more united team. There's always a question about with Movistar how behind Quintana they are. I mean, Valverde's here, you would assume, in a support role because he's ridden the Giro, but there's always that question, isn't there, of just how behind Quintana Movistar really are.
I think they're there. They're right up there. Maybe not at the level of Sky, but not very far behind. Unfortunately, they will not be counting on Carlos Betancourt, this fantastic Colombian rider that we all love. He won't be here, but they have a very strong team. They've proved in the past on team time trials, although we don't have a team trial on this Tour de France, that they were there to compete with all the best. So I think they're maybe not at the level of Sky, but they're certainly not very far behind.
You mentioned time trialing there. The sort of conventional wisdom would be you would say that that would hand Chris Froome an advantage over Quintana, but the two time trials here, the one to La Caverne du Pont d'Arc and particularly the one to Megève, really very level playing field between the two of them there, because they're time trials that rely on a climbing strength. But as we've seen this season, Quintana's time trialing on flatter courses has really come along, one of the best in the world, and it's really the likes of Bardet, Barguil, who will perhaps suffer most in those two stages. We've seen Thibaut Pinot's time trialing come on. One man we haven't even mentioned, Alberto Contador. I mean, you know, could that be a sort of last hurrah for Contador? I mean, this is his big event of the season. Everything around this, another very strong team, Tinkoff, and they will really try and mix it up. They won't sort of lie down and let Sky ride all over them. They'll try and go on the offensive, I'm sure.
I think Contador will have an impact on the race, whether he wins it or not. He, you know, with the way that he rides, he could, you know, he could shake things up, certainly in that final week. We should probably wrap things up about now. I should have mentioned at the start that our music that you heard at the start and throughout the episode it's a track called Ride On by a French band, Santore. Thank you very much to them. Ride On. Have you heard of them, Seb? Are they big in France?
Yeah, they're massive.
Well, they will be now that they are providing the music for the cycling podcast. Thank you very much to them. Very, very pleasant track, very jaunty, upbeat. It's kind of keeping with our mood, isn't it, Lionel?
It is, and very summery also, which is in contrast to the weather here in Normandy at the moment. Hopefully by the time we get down towards Limoges in the middle of the week, the sun will have come out. We'll be wearing shorts and enjoying the French summer. But it's a bit, the weather has Brexited here a bit.
It's all Brexiting all over. Anyway, we'll have that'll be a running theme, I'm sure, of our tour coverage. This has kicked it off. It doesn't really feel like it starts properly until stage one, of course. So we'll be back with our nightly show on Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and beyond. And Kilometre Zero starting Monday. Thank you again to Rafa, who are sponsoring us, and Eurosport. Pedlar de Charme starts on Saturday, so get your nominations coming in. I'll post the hashtag for that on Twitter tomorrow. Seb, looking forward to it?
Oh yeah, like the last 12 Tour de France I worked on, looking forward to it. Looking forward to being in the car and to say, c'est parti pour la première étape du Tour de France.